Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Hello, welcome to day two of the ICEB Midterm Executive Committee meeting. Today we will get into the meat of what we do and all about codes and all that wonderful stuff. It's going to be an exciting day. I'd like to give those who are members of these committees, we're going to have two committee meetings today. The Code Maintenance Committee and then the Guidelines for Technical Materials in the second half of today. So if you are a member of the Code Maintenance Committee, please raise your hand and we'll promote you to panelists so you can be here to be part of. There's Jody. We'll get you promoted. Okay, we have two.
More may arrive in time.
More may arrive, yes. If we see anybody else, we'll bring them up.
I'm a member, but I'm already a panelist, so I didn't raise my
Right.
hand.
Right.
Me too.
Okay, Jody, I did promote you. Well, I'm attempting to promote you to panelist. Okay, there we go. All right, and Jennifer. Let's see. All right, Jennifer, you should be.
There we go.
Those who
It's
haven't
not.
experienced this
There
before,
we
when
go.
you get promoted, it kind of sends you out of the meeting and brings you back in. So if you're feeling like you got kicked out, that's just how the process works. It'll bring you back.
It's a
Ilka
little.
Stagwin is here from Ireland as well. I just see Ilka in the participants, and she has kindly agreed to be our voice in the code maintenance. So maybe we want to
Yes,
invite her here as
hello,
well.
Ilka.
Have we promoted
Sorry.
Ilka?
We're just
There.
Okay,
Yes.
she just raised her hand.
Yep. Okay. Okay.
Great. Thank you. All right, Matthew, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Great. Go for it.
All right. Good morning, everybody. I have until 21:30, which is about an hour and 25 minutes from now. And this is just the first session, and then I have another session later on in the week. I think it's tomorrow. So we've got plenty of time. Hopefully we'll be able to fill the time because I know that we have a lot to talk about. The way that I'd like to go about this block of two sessions, I'd like to kind of concentrate in this session on what we've done and what we might like to do in the future. And then I think I'd like to take, excuse me, most of the second session to think about what order we do it in, excuse me, broadly speaking. So hopefully that makes sense to people. And I mean, it may or may not go that way, depending on how the discussion goes. But I think what I'd really like to achieve is to actually work out what we want to do without necessarily prioritizing it, because I think prioritizing it is a discussion all by itself and will kind of take away a little bit from what we actually want to do. So hopefully that makes sense. Where I'm going to start is actually by going through the report, which I think most of you have had and hopefully some of you have read. The report touches on a few things, and there are a few questions in that report that I really want to answer, and some high-level things that I'd like to discuss, and I'd like to get some kind of a mandate, if you like, to carry on with. And then towards the end, we'll get to the list of charges and tasks. So starting off with just going through, I will just go through every section. It's funny, I was in a bylaws committee meeting a while ago. And the discussion came up about, what should be a permanent committee and what should not be a permanent committee. And I made the point then that actually, if nothing else happened in ICEB, if ICEB had a crisis situation and we ran out of capacity or whatever, that the two things that ICEB must do above all else is keep the rule book up to date and keep guidelines for technical material up to date. And that really, I mean, everything else that it does is really important, but you can't do everything else unless you've got those two documents and unless those documents are up to date. So that's what the Code Maintenance Committee does. The Code Maintenance Committee specifically keeps the rule book, keeps the rules of Unified English Braille up to date. It is also at the moment charged with a subcommittee, which is chaired by Clive Lansing. That is the it gets called various things. I don't know that we've ever agreed on it, but what do we call it? The UEB Guide Technical Materials Subcommittee, I think we call it, or the UEB Technical Committee, or various things like it, chaired by Clive Lansing. That's technically a subcommittee of the Code Maintenance Committee, but it's been operating fairly autonomously for quite some time now, and I'm quite happy to keep it that way because I did maths at school and I did a tiny bit of maths at college, but I haven't done maths in a long time, and I think probably I'm not really qualified to help out with those discussions very much anyway, so I'm more than happy for it to just do its thing. Like all committees, every member country in ICEB is allowed to appoint one member to the Code Maintenance Committee in cooperation with the executive committee. I mean, if the executive really said, look, you can't have this person, then the executive would have a veto. But most of the time, a country says, I would like to appoint this person to the Code Maintenance Committee. And we say, that's fantastic. Thank you for putting somebody forward. The members of the Code Maintenance Committee at the moment in alphabetical order are Homnath Ariel from Nepal, James Bowden from the UK, Jody Doolan from Australia, Jennifer Dunham from the United States, Jen Golden from Canada, Catherine Howe from Ireland, Christo de Klerk from South Africa, and Maria Stevens from New Zealand. As has already been said, Catherine Howe is unable to be present today, and Ilka Staglin has been brought in to deputise for Catherine, and it's wonderful to see Ilka back. Ilka was part of ICEB for many years. I think she was Ireland's founding member of ICEB, so it's wonderful to see you back. Good evening, Ilka. The Code Maintenance Officer chairs the Code Maintenance Committee. We can appoint up to four. I thought it was up to two, but we can appoint up to four additional members. We've appointed two of them so far. these are people with particular expertise. One of those is Phyllis Landon, who was the original Code Maintenance Officer when UEB transitioned into its maintenance phase and retained that post until 2016, I think. And Joe Sullivan, who we heard from yesterday, who was part of the committee too, and continues to be very involved in the UEB process. We are allowed to have observers. We have a lot of observers on the Code Maintenance Committee. If you would like to be an observer, you're very welcome, but we would like you to seek permission from your Braille authority first. If you don't know who your Braille authority is, then contact us and we can tell you. But we certainly, the more the merrier as far as observers are concerned. We just don't want to bring somebody on who the Braille authority doesn't want on for whatever reason that might be. So we need permission from the Braille authority first, but we do have a lot. So Australia has 23 observers, which is six more than we had in 2024, so that's great. Canada has 35, which is three fewer. Ireland has two, which is one more. Nepal doesn't have any. New Zealand has eight observers, which is one more. South Africa has eight observers as well, which is two fewer. The United Kingdom has eight, which is one more. And the US has 38, which is one more. So that just gives you a sense of how many observers we have on the CMC list. We use the CMC list quite a lot. There has been a a sense within ICEB that we ought to have more meetings. and I touched on this briefly yesterday. I think what I find with UEB discussions is that UEB discussions can get really meaty really quickly. And you end up having to talk about really very technical aspects of the code, even though it's not a technical committee in the sense of the UEB technical committee. But, still having to talk about the implications of perhaps in some cases just having one dot different between two different ways of writing something. And the ideal time to have a meeting, which is actually not as ideal as you might think, but it's the most ideal that we can get. The most ideal time to have a meeting is 8 o'clock, 20:00 UTC, the same time as this midterm executive committee meeting. And I don't know about you, that's 9 o'clock in the evening for me. I don't know if I really want to be having conversations as technical as that at 9 o'clock in the evening, because you have to actually keep track of it. We, you know, it's all well and good to say, yeah, we should have a meeting, but actually, if you can't, really, you need to be able to think about the examples that people are giving you and apply them and actually work on them. And whatever time we had a meeting, somebody would be affected by this. And so I took the decision that, as far as possible, for the detailed work of the Code Maintenance Committee, we would try to get the work done by email. I accept that that has possibly drawn the balance too far in the opposite direction. The Code Maintenance Committee hasn't actually had a meeting yet this quadrennium, and I do recognise that that can potentially make things a bit tricky for the Code Maintenance Committee to work together, because there are new members on the committee and people don't necessarily know who they are. And so I accept that we ought to redress that balance and have a meeting. But I'm very keen that when we do have a meeting, that the meeting is more of a strategic meeting, that the meeting is more about actually discussing what we want to do about an issue, rather than discussing the exact dots in the exact order that we want. So a good candidate for that came out yesterday. I'll be in touch with Clive about it, for example, how we want to address various types of letters, and whether or not they should be symbols or whether or not they should be type forms. Not just the double struck letters, but also the capital bold letters that you see sometimes on social media and things like that. They're annoying. How do we want to deal with them? That's the sort of thing where we can agree that we want to do it as a type form, or we can agree that we don't want to do it as a type form, but we don't have to agree which dots those type forms are going to be, and therefore you don't have to get into protracted conversations about dots and make hasty decisions, but you can concentrate on the strategy. And that may be a bit easier to do in a meeting form. And actually, yes, it would achieve a decision a lot more quickly than an email would. So that's a thought about the sort of thing that we might be able to talk about at a meeting. And also things like prioritization of work quite well for a meeting, which is why we're here today in part, is it's convenient to have a meeting to talk about this sort of thing. The in terms of things that we did, this quadrant, so far, we've been going for about 2 years. When I started putting this report together, I realized just how quickly 2 years can go by. I have a lot of plates to spin. I'm self-employed, so I don't have anybody paying the bill for me to do code maintenance work. Any code maintenance work I do, the what's the word? Opportunity cost of doing code maintenance work is that I lose out on paid work. And if I lose out on paid work, the opportunity cost of losing out on paid work is I can't pay the bills. So there is a something about a self-employed person being the code maintenance officer versus someone who has a job and their job letting them be the code maintenance officer. That's not to make an excuse, that's just to set context. Because I realized as I was writing the report that actually we perhaps haven't done as much as I would have liked us to have done in that time. And when we come to tomorrow's session, we'll talk about how we might achieve more in the remaining time that we have. But nonetheless, we have done a few things. We published the third edition of the rule book. That was something that actually we reported on at the General Assembly. Various things happened to delay the publication of that rule book. There are actually still some outstanding issues. For example, we tried to use SymBraille with Unicode Braille, and we're having a terrible job actually. The rule book, the master document, is a Word document, and it has the SymBraille font embedded in it, but it has an old version of the SymBraille font embedded in it. And no matter what we've tried, we can't actually get the new version of the SymBraille font embedded. So there are only the only people who can produce the PDF files of the rule book are people who have Duxbury, and people in which case Duxbury has decided to upgrade the SymBraille font, which is not all people. We had a real problem actually getting that published. And there were various issues that were discovered at the transcription stage, various errors and things like that, which we went back and fixed. So it took us longer than we wanted, but we got there. It was published in November 2024. It's available on the ICEB website. RNIB now has copies of it in hard copy. So too does NLS. I think Canada does as well. So it's out there. It's being used. People know about it. Hats off to APH and their Braille refreshers, the weekly Braille refreshers that they do for constantly promoting the third edition of the rulebook for us. Thank you for doing that. It's brilliant. Lots of people are now using it. There was a town hall event in January 2025 that also went very well. A lot of interest, and I think by and large, that project was successful. There was one quite important thing to come out of that, and that was in my putting the rule book together. There were certain things about putting the rule book together. We'd left it a long time between putting the rule book together. 2013 was the last one. So in that time between 2013 and 2024, we'd had three code maintenance officers, Phyllis and Kathy Reeson and myself, and we'd all tried our best to write things down, but we'd all done it in slightly different ways. And so when we actually put the rule book together, there was quite a lot of work that needed to be done to make sure that we'd captured everything. And in trying to capture everything, I captured a little bit too much. So we said that the visible space could be used in numeric mode. And I said that thinking that there had been a vote, and it turned out that there hadn't in fact been a vote. It was something that was nearing a vote. It was something that had been talked about, but we hadn't actually voted the rule in. So we then took a retrospective vote on that, and thank you to my code maintenance colleagues for voting unanimously to approve the visible space in numeric mode. we then various people who then started using the visible space in numeric mode identified some problems with what we'd voted in. There were some edge cases that weren't terribly well covered. And so the rest of our work up to this midterm executive meeting has been on sorting out those edge cases. One of the lessons I learned from the rule book is that if it's difficult for us to find all of the rules in one place to update the rule book, thinking about the rule book fourth edition, whenever that might come out, if it was difficult for me as the editor to find out what all the changes were, goodness knows how difficult it must have been for individual UEB users to keep track of what had been changed and what hadn't. So what I'm really trying to do at the moment is to do as much as possible in whole sections. And this does mean that we've ended up that there's probably a few things that we could have pushed through a bit sooner, but we haven't because we've been trying to update a whole section of the rule book at a time. At the moment, section six, numeric mode. This is a deliberate choice. I think personally, it's much easier if to say to somebody, look, here's the third edition of the rule book, but when you get to section six, you need to download this whole new section. And this whole new section six replaces the whole of section six in the rule book, rather than saying we've made changes to five rules in section six, and here are the five rules that we've changed, and you've somehow got to just forget about those five rules in the rule book and just use, I just think it's easier to do it in whole sections from the point of view of the user and from the point of view of editing the next edition of the rule book. This does mean that as part of our work on numeric mode, there will be a few other things that we'll deal with as part of that. One of the things that we'll deal with is the idea of ordinal numbers. So if you have numbers like the first, the second, the third, quite often Microsoft Word will automatically superscript those first, second, and third. And we don't currently have a rule to say what to do in Braille in that case. We do have a precedent. I don't think anybody who's a transcriber would actually transcribe those superscripts. It would actually be very difficult to transcribe those superscripts because you would need to not only use a superscript sign, but you'd also need to use grouping indicators around the ordinal endings, and it would just take up a lot more cells than it would need to. So there is generally a precedent in Braille transcription to disregard the superscripts in that case, but we don't have a rule for it. There, we have been able to find a place in Section 6 where we can include such a rule. So we will, once Section 6 gets ratified, which is likely to happen very soon, we will have a rule about that so that people know definitively not to include those superscripts. We also are going to have a new rule on postcodes for people who live in the UK in particular, and I'm sure it applies to other countries too. Postcodes like B236 UX, where there is a space between the three and the six, how do you handle that? Do you use a regular space or do you use a numeric space? And we've taken the decision that we use a regular space, which is what most transcribers do anyway, but thinking of the new transcriber who might not necessarily be aware of that precedent, there's a rule brought in to tighten that up. So when Section 6 gets ratified, it will be quite a large piece of work. It handles quite a few of those sorts of things. And so it's not that it feels like we've done less than we have, I think, even though we still could have done more. And I just wanted to bring that to people's attention. So there you go. We have whole sections. There will be whole things, not whole things. There will be parts of the rule book which inevitably won't be able to be published as their own sections. I'm thinking of, for example, as part of the update to Section 6, we have also thought about changing various other aspects of, I think it's Section 5. I've just actually lost the part of the report where I say it, but let me just see if I can find that. Yes, it's actually an update to section 3.23 that we've made as part of our work on section 6. The Technical Materials Committee have also made some updates that we'd like to incorporate, and there are various things. So there will be a need to, we don't necessarily want to reissue the whole of section 3 just for one tiny little rule. That does feel a little bit excessive. And so what I'm thinking of doing anyway, is having one. If we've made material changes to a section, update the whole section. If it literally is just one rule, then have one document which we would call something like Miscellaneous Updates to the Rules of Unified English Braille, and that document would be date stamped. So it would say Miscellaneous Updates as of August 2026, for example, and that would include all of those things that are just a little bit too small to warrant updating a whole section. The other thing that I would like to talk about, and I might just stop for discussion of this before we go on to anything else very briefly. When we published the rule book, we made every effort to make as many corrections as we could. We tried not to have errors in it. I mean, who wants to publish a document with errors in? But nonetheless, there were errors identified. One or two people came forward with quite extensive lists of errors, and I'd like to thank them for doing that. If anybody finds an error, please let us know, because errors are really quite embarrassing. And if nothing else, we'll fix them in the fourth edition. So we have maintained a running list of all of those errors. What we decided to do, by the time the errors had come through, the book had been published and people were working on publishing the hard copy of it and things like that. So what we decided to do, rather than continuing to republish it, we decided we put an errata list up on the website. And we do actually have a candidate errata list that we could put on the website immediately. This was fine at the time because the Code Maintenance Committee hadn't completed its work on Section 6, and we hadn't identified that there would be these smaller updates. But we're starting to identify the potential for smaller updates now. And what I don't want, like I say, is for people to have to look in lots and lots of documents. So the first proposal that I'd like to bring to this meeting before we start talking about charges and tasks and things like that, is that I'd actually quite like to, with apologies in particular to Frances Mary, who spent a lot of time putting the errata together, I'd like to perhaps revisit this issue of the errata and combine the errata with all of the with any miscellaneous updates that we might do. So it might be called updates and errata, or errata and updates, rather than having one document with the errata and one document with all of the smaller changes. We would need to be able to identify in the document what is an errata and what is a change. I think we would be able to do that. We could just put that at the start of the heading, correction or change or whatever we wanted to call it. But I feel like it would be easier for users if we had just one document listing small changes rather than two documents listing small changes. So I'm going to have some water, and I'm going to put it out for discussion if anybody has any thoughts, particularly if anybody feels very strongly against that proposal. I'd be interested to hear from folks. We have a hand.
It's
The hand is
Jen.
from Jen. Hello, Jen.
Hi. I don't feel strongly. I know, like, and again, just because Banna does this doesn't mean that everybody thinks the way Banna does, but we tend to keep our errata and our updates separate so that because there's a difference between like an error and the change, but again, I like
Yeah, can I just check before we go any further? Jen, you broke up quite a lot, and I don't know whether that's because of my internet connection or yours, but is anybody else able
it's
to? It's
me.
Jen's. It's
Oh, right,
Jen's.
yeah, okay.
It's me.
Thank you. Sorry
Do
to
you know
put you
what
on
I
the spot.
said? Like, should I? I'm gonna.
No, I got the gist of it, which was that there is a difference between an update and a correction, and for that reason, Banner has taken the decision to keep them separate.
Yeah, but I don't feel like, oh my goodness, we absolutely have to do that. I'm just, that has been Banna's reasoning, so.
Yeah. Thank you. Did I see another hand go up? I heard a hand go up, but I think it might have gone down again.
It was me. I was
No,
my
it's
hand
just gone up. It's
up to speak and then realized something easier.
Well,
Yeah.
we do have one up now. It's Jennifer Dunham. Hello, Jennifer.
Hello. I have no strong opposition either. I guess my encouragement would be whatever method is going to make sure that we get the information out to the people sooner. I would hate to see sort of updates held up because the errata wasn't ready or vice versa. But either
Sure,
way works.
thank you. The errata is ready. We actually had intended to publish the errata some time ago. There were a few things that we held off from publishing because we were in we were transitioning the ICEB website from the old website to the new one. One of those was section 1.7 on grade one indicators for guidelines for technical material. The other was the errata, and for various reasons, the website took longer than we thought, and I had by the time the website had been published, I had moved on to section six, and I'm afraid the errata dropped down my priority list until somebody pointed it out a few months ago. And then I said, oh dear, yes, we really ought to get that done. But by that point, we had identified perhaps other things that we might like to add to it. And so it never actually got published. But the core of the errata is ready. We could actually probably publish it. Maybe not today. We'd probably want to have a look at it. But yeah, we wouldn't be holding up the updates because the errata is not ready. That's not a concern that I would have. James.
Did you include the extra errata that I found?
I have a list of the extra errata that you found.
So they're not actually included yet. So it's not ready to go yet.
Well, yes, okay. Yes.
So that's a very David Spivey comment, isn't it? I'm sorry.
Yes, it is. It is. But I take it in the spirit in which it was intended. Thank you, James. I haven't looked at that errata document since we finished it, unquotes, and yes, fair enough.
There were errata as in the errata, which is yes, embarrassing. Well,
let's see if we can fix those. Jody. Now you'll need to unmute yourself, Jody. Or
of course.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. No, that's all right. Sorry, I didn't mean it like that.
Hi, Matthew.
Hi. Yeah,
I agree with you that as a user, I think I would find it easier to have fewer documents to refer to. You know, you've got the rule books, you know, edition, the rule book edition 3. You maybe have a new issued section. You know, how many more or sections, you know, and then if all the little bits are all in, all the little updates are in one other document, I think I would find that easier having to open another one and keep track of all the, you know, all the different documents. Yeah, I can see the point with Barney, you know, keeping them separate. But I mean, if it's an error or a little change, it's kind of the same difference, you know, from a user perspective, it's an update. So, yeah. I'm happy.
Thanks, Jody. Do we have any more? Yes, we do. This is very awkward in a webinar because I have to go back from tab to tab to find out who's got their hand up. I've got another hand from James, which I don't think is a hand left over from last time. So, James, did you want to come in?
Yeah, so there is a difference between an errata and a change. The errata we've got are really typographical issues. They're not actually substantive rule issues. Is that fair?
That's fair.
It's things like there's a half a page blank, and that's not going to affect a rule. It's just a typographical error.
Yes, there are. I think there might. Again, I'm not. It's been a long time since I've looked at the document, and I need to look at it again. One of the other things that I think came up during the errata was things like type form mismatches between the print example and the Braille example. So where we'd updated a style, I think it's mostly the print that's inaccurate. Actually,
yeah, exactly. It's typographical.
Well, yes, oh. but the example is quite important. The example shows the meaning of something, you know, it's showing, for example, what happens if we cancel bold halfway through a word. Well, if the word that we're cancelling bold in isn't bolded at all, then the example doesn't quite show what it's trying to show in the same way. So it is typographical, but I think some of them are quite meaningful.
Yes, but they don't actually make any changes to the rules.
No.
That's where I'm coming from.
No, they don't.
Whereas the rule changes do change the rules.
Yeah. I'll take Jody again, and then I'll take Frances Mary because I'm sure she has things to say as the person who did the lion's share of the work on the errata in the first place. Jody.
I don't need to unmute again.
You didn't mute last time. Yeah.
Just to say that I haven't actually seen the errata or looked at, or I might have received a copy from Kim, but I haven't really looked at it. So, that's a good clarification, James, that I would have thought that there may be errors that are actual errors could be included in errata, though. It, maybe not this time, but perhaps in the future. Let's hope not. Let's hope we don't make errors.
Let's hope we don't find any. Francis Mary, hello.
Hi there, Matthew and everyone. I was just looking at the errata because it had been some time since I had seen it as well. And the what we had to, there were a few things that were purely typographical, James, but because they didn't change the meaning or they weren't potentially confusing, those were not changed. I'm sorry, they were not identified in the errata. I mean, I've shared the errata document with all of you, but also Phyllis Landon looked at it, and I believe Kathy Reason looked at it as well. And the corrections, for the most part, they don't change practices, but they did make things easier to follow. So, for example, things that should have been in italics or were and were not, some things that were out of order. An example where a math issue wasn't lined up correctly. So there were things like that that would make it more difficult to follow the rule book as published because the examples didn't match, for example. So they weren't substantive, but they were things that I think need to be identified and fixed so that the rule book is more useful.
Thank you.
Thanks, FM. I should just say, actually, because you make an interesting point about the order. One of the things that was picked up was the order of things in the appendices. One of the things that's come out of section six is that we'll need to add a few things to appendix three. And so, what I would propose to do for those is actually appendix three can be a bit of a struggle to search through. And you may not, in fact, want to search through two different copies of Appendix 3. So, my proposal would actually be for things like Appendix 3 to just reissue the whole appendix whenever there's a change, because it, I think, is probably easier for somebody to just print off a new copy of the appendix and scan down it than it would be to have to scan down the first copy and then double back and scan through the list of changes. So again, we can think about that, but that may be that may if any of those were in Appendix 3, that may make the appendix a bit sh the errata a bit shorter. I don't want to drag this out too much, but I do see we've got a hand up from Jennifer, and we have another hand up from James. I'm going to come to Jennifer first, please.
Just very quickly, in case it is helpful, in BANA, one of the things that we have done when we talk about this, we actually do use several categories, with errors as the typographical ones, expansions and clarifications as the types of things that don't change practice but do clarify what the intent was, and then changes would are things which would change practice that we handle differently.
Sure, thank you. I don't know if we would use the second of those categories, but yeah, that's helpful. I'd envisaged using two of those three, so that's very helpful. And I mean, we possibly could use the third one as well if people wanted to. James, then, and I have there's one observer who would like to make a comment, and I'd like to hear the observer's perspective, and then I think I might draw a line under this issue unless anybody has anything glaringly else that they want to say. So, James.
I was just going to say yes to republishing Appendix 3,
Oh, thank
with the
you.
specific case that we are going to have a lot of new symbols coming in at some point.
Yes, this is a good point. Thank you for bringing up the point.
And I will ask, would you like me, Matthew, to ask Deborah to unmute?
I would, yes, please. I'm having trouble getting my participants lists to pop up, which is very annoying. But yes, if you could ask Deborah, thank you.
Yes. All right.
Hello, it's Deborah here. Yeah, I just would be a little concerned. In reality, things change all the time, and they have to change, of course. But it's just that you sort of have to remember one system, and then, you know, sort of another system comes along, and it's just hard to. I find it a little bit hard to grasp. I'm still learning, in the process of learning UEB. And so it's just, I don't know. I don't know if anybody else feels the same way as, you know, as myself. And yes, we do have to, it's important that we do learn new things in Braille. And, you know, if we want to keep improving the Braille code and stuff like that, but it's just a little overwhelming at times.
Yeah. I really appreciate hearing that perspective. thank you very much for sharing it. You've walked into perhaps the most lively discussion about rule changes that you'll perhaps ever walk in on, apart from perhaps a closed meeting of the Code Maintenance Committee. We talk about rule changes a lot more here than we probably do anywhere else. I absolutely hear it. When we released the third edition of the rulebook, we heard that a lot from schools as well, and other people and readers and you know, people saying, well, we've just got used to UEB and now you're going to make a new UEB, mm-hmm. and how does all this work and all of that. I think what I want to say in response to that is this is always on the mind of the Code Maintenance Committee. Whenever we think about a rule change, one of the first things that we think about is how is this going to impact documents that have already been prepared in UEB? And as far as possible, we try to make a change to the rules that doesn't impact the reader. So, for example, we haven't made any changes or any meaningful changes to the rules on contractions. So we've not added any contractions, we've not taken any contractions away, we've not changed whether you should use the THE sign and the letter R or the TH sign and the ER sign. We haven't changed mm-hmm. any of those rules. So mm-hmm. we're talking about lots of rule changes, but actually, if you pick up a library book that was transcribed according to the second edition, and you pick up another library book that was transcribed according to the third edition, as a reader, to be honest with you, you're probably not going to notice. As a literary Braille reader, if you'll allow me to use the term, as a literary Braille mm-hmm. reader, you're probably not going to notice any change at all, actually. The changes are generally very subtle. They're generally, we bring in a change where we think it's going to make Braille more consistent. So if we see that there is a rule in UEB, but transcribers are not understanding that rule, that would be a good reason to bring a rule in. Sometimes we might add a sign. So one of the things we're going to come on to talk about is type forms, and do we need a sign for strike through, for example. So we might add a sign mm-hmm. for strike through, but we're not going to take away the signs for bold in italics and underline. So you wouldn't have to relearn the signs that you already know. That there might be a new sign that you might have to learn occasionally. But we do really try and keep that in mind. And absolutely, we don't want another situation like we had when UEB first came out, where there's mm-hmm. this, you know, there's so many changes that people have got to get their head around. And yeah, a lot of them either apply to very specific subject areas, so that Section 6 applies to maths, but unless you're doing maths, you're not going to notice any change there, really. Or they
yeah,
are
I don't really do math. Math reading.
Yeah. But I appreciate the perspective, and thank you. It's something that I think the Public Relations Committee would also be very interested in when we talk about rule changes, not to mm-hmm. try and scare people. So,
of course,
I appreciate it. Thank you.
But thank you,
Matthew. May I add, as a point of note, that many of us on the Code Maintenance Committee are actually Braille readers ourselves.
Yes. That is a very
Because
good.
sometimes that seems to get lost. It's not just the big ICEB imposing stuff. We are actually braille readers, a lot of us too.
Where to go? We have two observers. One of whom is Debbie Gillespie, who I would like to hear from. We probably only have time to take one of those two observers, so I'd quite like to take Debbie. And sorry, Christina, your time will come in a future meeting. And I see we've got a couple of others as
I've
well.
asked. So there we go.
James and all. Quick two, this is a fast one. Not pulling a fast one. I agree with Jennifer Dunham about categories, and I think I don't I'm not big on the expansions and clarifications name either, but I think it's more needed in BANA than perhaps in UEB. I think I would just call it format. And for those of you who know me well, you know I love formats, because I think we need to make the distinction between a format error and a rule error or an omission or something. And I think that's pretty well it. So I like the categories. I think we should have a one, of something called, because you need to know the difference between an error and just something that's formatted badly or something got left, like James Bowden's a blank page. That was a great example. That's it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Debbie. Brilliant point. I'm seeing hands come up. I would quite like to start to draw this one to a close. I'll hear Jennifer and I'll hear Jody, and then I will call for we'll put a motion and see where it goes. So Jennifer first, because your hand was up the longest, and then Jody.
Apologies, I think I forgot to lower my hand, so that gives you your time back.
Oh, there you go. Thank you very much. Brilliant. Jody.
Hi, sorry, when I was laughing, I forgot that I was not on mute.
Oh, that's all right. Not a problem.
I was just thinking, with the errata and the categories, and if, for example, we issue section six and there are errata needed, on that section of the rule book, would those errata be captured in the original errata document? Is that just if it's going to be separate, or would there be a further errata issued for section six? It was just kind of,
That this was bound to
will
come up at.
the errata, if we do keep it separate, would be a running errata for any new sections that are issued,
If we
or
kept it separate,
perhaps the errata, it kind of would have made sense if it was published at the same time or shortly after the rule book actually came out. They kind of would go together, and then most people would almost forget about those minor things that's just a clarification. And that from that point on, we kind of keep a track of little changes. And I don't know, just thinking out loud.
I think if we kept the errata separate, we would probably have errata to the rule book, and then probably underneath it errata to the additional sections. There would be some. Oh,
I was
sorry.
just saying, I've opened it up. It's actually organized by sections currently. So you could
Yes.
jump.
So you could just add the updated things in. Yeah, that'd be one way to do it. I mean, I'd
But
like
there's
to
a
think.
date at the bottom, so you'd have to keep updating the date as well.
Yes. And we'd have to do that anyway as new. And we could even date the sections. We could put a date by each section to show which version of the section
True, true.
we're
So
talking
I'm happy
about.
with whichever
Yeah.
approach, I guess.
Okay. Obviously, if we were to keep the errata and the updates together, there would be something to be said. I mean, you'd hope that we wouldn't find errata in section six, but you never know. There'd be something to be said for actually just reissuing the section again. But I think that would possibly be something to think about when we encounter it, in the hope that we'll never encounter it. But
If it's only typographical, perhaps
yeah.
sometimes there's issues with the Simbrow font, or
Yes.
In localized examples, that's
Yeah.
happened through the draft process, the review
Yeah.
process.
So look, we spent a lot of time on this. I think the discussion was useful, but I would quite like to bring it to a close at this point. So I think what I'm going to do is put a motion to the, I'm not sure who needs to vote on this. I guess it's the executive, but yeah, I think we're broadly in agreement. So I'm going to put forward a motion that is the Unified English Braille Code Maintenance Committee combine errata and small rulebook updates into a single document. I think that's a fair motion for having come up with it on the spot.
Yeah,
So I
but
will,
include necessary categories.
yeah. So I will move that motion. Can I hear a second for that motion from the executive?
Matthew, just to clarify, small updates.
Yeah, well, okay. Updates that
Do not
do
warrant
not
republishing
warrant
in
a
the
new
whole
section.
section. Yes.
Updates that do not require the publication of a the republication of a section. Yes. So I'll move the motion in the updated form. Can I hear a second for that motion?
Maria Stevens will second.
Thank you, Maria. I don't know if I'm allowed to chair discussions like
You
this, but I'm in the chair at the moment,
go for it. Do it.
so
Just do it.
okay. Thank you, Judy. All in favour?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. So we will do that. Okay. I said that I'd talk about prioritization of work in the second session, so I will do that. There is a whole thing in the report, with a list of things. Sorry, I'm just going back to the report now. Short-term future, it'd be long-term stuff. Yes. So, no, it's short-term and long-term. So, we'll, sorry about this, folks. It's first thing in the morning where I am at the moment. So, we're going to come to that in the second session, unless we have time to do it in the first session. So, what I'd like to do in the second part of this session is I'd really like to kind of tease out charges and tasks. So I just want to set some context here. When I inherited the Code Maintenance Committee, I learnt about this process that ICEB has, which derived from a process that BANA has. And the process is that basically a committee's work is set by charges. And a charge is a specific piece of work that has been ratified by the executive committee for a particular committee to do. So this, what it does is it assures accountability. It makes sure that if the executive committee says to the code maintenance committee, you've got to work on this project, that the code maintenance committee doesn't run amok and work on another project, which may be useful, but may not actually be the project that the executive committee wants us to work on. And part of the reason for that is because countries pay a membership fee to ICEB, and the executive committee has a responsibility to ensure that that membership fee provides countries with value for money. And so part of that is making sure that the countries get what they want out of it, and what they want out of it is the charges that the executive committee put forward to the various committees. So from an accountability point of view, it works very well. We have actually finished some charges. Well, we were issued some new charges, and straight away we finished them. So we were issued CM30 device symbols for the strike through indicators, strike through symbol, word, passage indicator, and terminator. CM31, clarify the definitions of arrow and shape modes in the rulebook as they relate to grade 1 indicators. CM32, attend to the edge cases and unintended omissions which have been identified with allowing the visible space in numeric mode. CM33, clarify that for ordinal numbers, print superscripts may be ignored. CM34, devise rules for emoji characters. CM36, there was a CM35. It went to the subcommittee on technical materials. Hold a vote on the inclusion of the visible space in numeric mode. So we've done CM36. We will have done CM32, CM33 very shortly. I'm in ICEB mode this week. I will send out the final version. We're very close to a vote on that. So that will come out this week while I'm doing other things to do with ICEB. So that should give you a sense of what charges are. We have very few other charges. In my head, this is not a bad thing. I think if the Code Maintenance Committee has been charged to do something, then the Code Maintenance Committee needs to do it. And if the Code Maintenance Committee hasn't done it, then the Code Maintenance Committee needs to report in and say that it hasn't done it. And it's not nice to report in and say that you haven't done something. To a certain extent, yes, all right, we could do more. But also, there's a whole long list of things that we could potentially be doing. My sense of things is that if you assign too many charges, what you end up with is a situation where nobody wins. The Code Maintenance Committee has got 20 charges. It's got 4 years in which to do them. That means the Code Maintenance Committee's got to get through 5 charges a year, and I just don't think that anybody has the capacity to get through 5 charges a year on top of a day job, on top of other things that life has to offer. We perhaps do have the capacity to get through maybe 2 charges a year, but if we've only got the capacity to get through 2 charges a year, does it really do anything for the morale of the Code Maintenance Committee to have any more than about 8 charges on the list? And I would argue that it doesn't. And it certainly doesn't do anything for the morale of the Code Maintenance Officer, who's got to report that as of the 20 charges, we haven't even done 50% of them. So I've been quite careful not to ask for any more charges, because we haven't done the ones that we've got. And I just think, surely we need to do the charges that we've got before we start to ask for any more. But what has happened is that we have meetings, we have discussions. There was a discussion at the General Assembly in 2024. There was the town hall on grade one, not on grade one indicators. There was one, but there was the town hall on the new rulebook. Questions came out of that that we hadn't thought about, that we thought, you know what, actually, at some point, we probably do need to think about this. We've had internal meetings of the Code Maintenance Committee where something's come up. We've gone, actually, while we're thinking about this, perhaps we ought to also think about this. And we've decided that actually, in hindsight, we're not going to, but it's still something that's worth thinking about. And how do we record that? Because sooner or later, we probably do actually want to come back to it. And what we don't want is a whole is to get through all the charges and then to be sat there going, well, what are we going to do next? So it's useful to have an idea of the sorts of things that are coming up, the sorts of things that we might want to talk about. And also, if something really comes up that you think, gosh, do you know what, we really have to, actually, this is so serious, like the issues with the with numeric mode, this is so serious that we just have to do it, then of course you create a new charge and you do it. But so how do you keep track of that? So the way that I've been keeping track of that is with what I've been calling tasks. Now, tasks is probably not the right word for it. It was a word that I came up with. I'm not even sure if I came up with it or whether I inherited it from previous Code Maintenance Officers. But it's probably not the right word, but it's the word that I chose to use. I have a list, a huge list of them. I included them all in the report for transparency. These are not charges. The executive committee didn't say to us, you've got to work on these. In some cases, the Code Maintenance Committee decided that we would like to work on them at some point. In some cases, actually, even the code maintenance committee hasn't decided whether we should, ought to, would like to, etc., work on these. Some of them might have been a really good question came up in the town hall on the rule book, and I thought, yes, I'm going to write that down before I forget it. But then we never had any further discussion about it. And in fact, there may be an answer to that question that's staring us in the face that nobody's thought of, which means that we probably don't need this task anyway, but it was just, we needed to write it down somewhere. So I have a list of tasks. I'm not referring to this list of tasks for work that we have to do. When we think about prioritizing the rules, prioritizing the work that we have, I'm not looking at the list of tasks and thinking, should I include the list of tasks in my priority? The list of tasks is off the list. It's just a list of things that we might come back to in the future. The only time when I do look at the list of tasks is if we're updating a section we're updating a section of the rulebook. A really good example of this, we're updating a section of the rulebook on typeform indicators. I'll have a look down the list of tasks and I'll see if there are any tasks that are related to typeform indicators. Because if there are tasks related to typeform indicators, then it would make sense to deal with them. And we've got a charge to look at the strike through, which is an implicit charge to look at typeform indicators anyway. That's the point when I might come forward and either say, look, this is such a minor thing, we can just do it and we probably don't need to have a charge for it, or this is a fairly major piece of work, but it's a major piece of work that's worth doing at the same time, and so perhaps we had ought to have a charge for it. And that's the only time when a task would make its way into the code maintenance committee's work without first being charged, is if it's a really small thing. There's a task that says, clarify the rule for such and such. We're working on that rule anyway, and we just think, do you know what? While we're here, we'll just do it. We're updating the rule anyway. By the time we've asked for a charge, we could have actually done the clarification, and it's fine. So, with that in mind, with all of that in mind, I think what I'd quite like us to do for the rest of this session is have a good old look at this list of tasks and make a decision about whether we want to charge any of them, on the understanding that if we don't charge them, we could always come back to them and charge them later. This is not a, you know, we made the decision not to charge it, so we're never going to charge it again. But what I don't want, what has happened, because I've been quite open about what this list of tasks is, what's happened is that a lot of people have seen the list of tasks and charges and A, got confused about what's a charge and what's a task, and B, started to say, well, why are we not working on this? Because it's on the list of tasks. Well, we're not working on it because it's on the list of tasks and not the list of charges. So I just want to get some sort of closure on this topic, at least for the time being, as to, is there anything on the task list that you really think, actually, yes, all right, we've got a lot of charges already, but this is A, simple enough that we can do it quickly, or B, important enough that it trumps some of the other charges that are already on the list. And then what we can do going forward after the midterm is we have an agreed list of charges, at least until 2028. And then we can work on those and we can put this task list to bed until the next time we need to look at future charges. So the task list is at Appendix B in the report. I don't particularly want to just go down and read it because there's a lot of them and some of them are fairly complex, and I would like to think that perhaps people might have read that in their own time. But I will just stay quiet for a couple of minutes now and let people have a read of it and invite hands if anybody has any thoughts. I see I have a hand already from James. Hi, James.
So I'll do a starter for 10. Are CMK and CMAU the same?
I shall have a look.
The first and the last in the list, basically, about crosses.
Revisits 3.9, dealing with crosses.
And CMAU.
Assign a symbol for the cross mark to go along with the check mark. Well, it would certainly seem that way, wouldn't it?
Oh, they're the same. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I don't know, actually, because I don't know. And this is part of the reason why it's not being charged yet, is because actually,
yeah.
So we just haven't had a chance to have a look through and figure it out.
Do we
I
know who
actually
submitted
don't know.
CMK? I think it was Barmer, and I think CMA, you might have been.
I can speak for CMAU.
It's Australia, yeah.
Yeah. We were informed that there was an existing, I think, charge for crosses. So yeah, it makes sense to combine the two.
Yeah.
So would the symbol for the cross mark.
There is a proposal on the table.
So would that go into section 3.9?
Yes.
Okay. Are you familiar enough with 3.9 to be able to say that conclusively? I'm not. I haven't read section 3 in a long time.
I've got 3.9 is dealing with crosses. Yeah, actually, I wrote the proposal for what do you call it? CMAU.
Yes.
And I referred to section 3.9 when I wrote it. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, this is a good candidate then for something that, okay, look, we don't particularly want to have any more charges, but look, we've got a proposal on the table. It probably wouldn't take very much to get that proposal in. So if we wanted to make it a charge, we could do. I see, Jennifer, you've got your hand up. You might have information on the first one of those two. Do
yes.
you want to unmute and comment on that?
If I may. So regarding CMK, this is a pretty abbreviated version of what was actually discussed, and that probably happened on our end as time went by. But the discussion that happened in BANA had to do with the language in the rule regarding what to use, and what the language makes it sound as if you decide whether to use a multiplication symbol or a cross or an X, et cetera, based on the purpose, as opposed to just following what's in print. And we just wanted to have a clarification of that.
So it is different.
That is different.
So you're saying, because I need to be clear about this, that whether you'd use a multiplication sign or what else would you use?
Or an X.
Or an X. Ah, so we have a multiplication and we
lab
have an
cross
X.
Retriever, that sort of
but
thing.
We have a multiplication sign and we have an X, but we don't have a cross.
And there's a fourth category as well, which hasn't been mentioned, which is the cross denoting death.
Yeah. So
ours was more specifically the mark that's used, you come
yes.
across in math.
You've got a, yes.
Or, yes. Tick or cross. Yeah. Check
tick
or cross.
Yes.
Coming, call from
ours
transcribers.
So they're not the same. So they're not, they don't, shouldn't be merged.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
But perhaps they should be clarified.
Yes. Yes. All right.
They could
yes.
be dealt with at the same time, couldn't they?
Yeah. I think they should be dealt with at the same time.
Yeah. So the question then is, would the symbol for the cross go into, I need to actually read the rule book, I think, would it go into 3.9? Or would we add it as another section, like 3.27 or something?
Where does the tick mark come in?
Right at the end.
3.26, I think.
It was a slightly controversial decision, I think.
A bit of a pair to that. The cross mark is a pair to the check mark.
Yeah, well, we put the check, because all of those section threes are alphabetical order, apart from the check mark, which we stuck at the end in order to avoid having to rewrite a whole bunch of references, which makes a lot of sense. But also, the more we do that, the more scattered that section is going to look. So for RUEB section 4, we might want to actually think about.
I mean, if you add the cross mark, you would, I think, at least refer to that within 3.9. If it wants to be its own separate section, you should at least reference from section 3.9 crosses.
Yeah.
We're getting into detail.
That's detail too. Yeah. I think you'd work on the two charges together, or two tasks together.
Yeah.
3.9. No, 3.9 crosses. There's the dagger. There's a small X. There's a large X. There's a time sign.
It says only use the letter when the cross has no mathematical or scientific meaning.
So
But we do have the multiplication sign there.
we could, in fact, add the, yes, I think we could actually do this as one thing, because we could just add your proposal for the cross mark, Jody, as the first one in that list. So 3.9 crosses, and then the cross mark, and then the double dagger, or the, is it a dagger or a double dagger? But the dagger, the small x. So you'd have five crosses listed in that section instead of four. And then
We can decide the details
friend
later,
uses
but
crosses. Yes, you could do that. Oh, we've only got one rule in that. That's actually quite a small piece of work, isn't it? Yes, we could probably do that fairly quickly. Print uses crosses for a variety of purposes. Select the appropriate braille symbol based on the purpose of the cross. So what you're asking for, Jennifer, is a thing that adds on to that, that says where the purpose of the cross is ambiguous, use whatever's in print. Is that about the size of it?
Whether it's that or just a clarification or something that comes out and says, yep, we're doing this purpose-based, not following print, because that kind of does go against what we're telling everybody for other things in UEB.
Yeah, so we probably want to expand it for things like if a time sign is clearly intended. So yes, I see the question. If print says 2x3 equals 6, we know a time sign is intended. So the question is, based on that rule, yes.
Are we asking that
Select the
judgments be
appropriate
made?
braille symbol based on the purpose of the cross. That rule implies that you should swap out that X for a time sign. Yes, I see. Yes, all right. Well, I think this is I didn't particularly want to come away and charge any tasks, but I think this is chargeable. Am I feeling a sense in the room that we perhaps want to charge this one and put it on a list of things to work on?
Yeah, it's an easy one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, that's fine.
Is that a motion?
Well, so we need to write the charge. So,
You just take the CM and change the letters to numbers.
well, yeah, but we've already said that that doesn't make much
They
sense.
can
So,
merge.
what we want
Merge
to
them.
do is we want to create a braille symbol for the cross mark and clarify. Clarify section 3.9 to show to what extent we should follow print or something like that. So, what did I just say? I
You said,
said, yes, thank you, James.
Matthew moved to create a braille symbol for the cross mark. Can I parenthesis add as opposed to check?
Yes.
Opposite of check.
Yep.
And clarify section 3.9 to show to what extent we should follow print.
Yes. Charges are not, I mean, they hang around for a long time, but they're internal things. They're not things that we would expect vast number of users to see unless they attend a meeting like this one. So I'm not too worried about it being in absolutely pristine condition, as it were. I'll ask James to read that once more and then see if anybody wants to amend that charge before we put
Can
it
we
to a
ask,
vote.
in particular, Jennifer and Jody, if they're happy with that wording? I'll repeat it. So Matthew moved to charge, sorry, to create a braille. Do we need to put add to charge the CMC
We do
in there?
have to chart make it that it's a
Right.
charge. We're not just asking them to
Okay.
create it.
The
We're
code maintenance
charging them.
committee too. Right. So I'll read it again. Matthew moved to charge the code maintenance committee to create a braille symbol for the cross Mark, why does Braille display not go more than one line? I don't know. Brackets opposite of the check mark, close bracket, and clarify section 3.9 to show to what extent we should follow print.
Okay, anybody have any amendments that they want to make to that charge?
I think that it's clear. It helps to know where the focus should be.
Yeah, I agree.
Thank you. I will move it then. Can I hear a second? Now, this is the Executive Committee charging the Code Maintenance Committee. So sorry, I need a second from the Executive Committee,
Jen G
please.
will second.
Jen Golden, thank you. All in favour?
Ooh.
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you. That motion carries. What I might suggest, James, as a and perhaps I should have done it before we voted, if we come up with any further charges, I might propose to change that slightly to Matthew moved to charge the code maintenance committee as follows, colon, and then a bulleted list, rather than
Yep.
having to write Matthew moved three or four times. It might just make it a
Thank
bit
you.
easier to read when we
Thank
look back
you.
at the
Well,
It will be easier when I update the charges spreadsheets also, if actually if they're all in one place
yeah.
like that, if that
That does
helps.
assume that they all passed unanimously,
Well, of
etc.
course, yes, if there was one that didn't
Yes.
pass, then
Yes.
of
Yeah,
course you yes.
I can do that
Don't.
syntactic change, yeah.
I mean, I'd like to think if one doesn't pass, then it wouldn't
Yeah.
get to that stage, but yes, all right. Okay, thank you. I've taken on one new charge and I've got 15 minutes left in which
Wait
just to
a
su
moment. You've taken one new charge and you've got rid of two t tasks.
Yes, I
That's
have. Well, yes,
two for
that's
one. That's good, isn't it?
so brilliant. Yes, so we've done it. Fantastic. I've got 15 minutes left. Does anybody want to hit me with another one?
CMAD.
Thank you, James.
About the HAD contraction. And I think that's another easy one.
Yes, would you like to speak to that, James? I think that came
Yes,
from you.
certainly. So it did come from UKAF. There is a rule, section 10.7.3, my guess, three or four, about the HAD contraction. And the rule currently says use the HAD contraction when the A is short, not long. And it's not defined what that means, and it is clear that Barnett interpreted it differently from UKAF. Not surprising, we live in different nations, we speak a different language. US English versus British English, and things don't always mean the same thing. I'm just proposing that that should be clarified. And it does make a difference, by the way. There was a word where we considered the A short and the Americans considered the A long. And that put a blocker on how do we actually contract this particular word. And I also suggested, for clarity, that the H must be aspirant. Aspirated. Jen, you can tell me the right word in phonology.
No, that is,
Okay.
you're good.
Yeah. So I
So
think it's a very simple piece of work. We just need to specify what is a long A.
I think that different people will agree or disagree about how simple a task this is. I've got visions of this being a very simple task that we will have a disagreement on that will never be resolved, and that it will turn into it will hold us
Beethoven
up.
revisited.
Yes,
Yeah.
Beethoven
Well,
yeah, but the
revisited.
thing is,
We're all thinking it.
So with the Beethoven question, that sort of word, the CMC just has to make a decision, and the
Yeah.
rest of us who don't like that decision live with it. That's democracy.
So what I'd like us to do with this one is I'd like us to take this in two parts. I'd like us to agree or not agree today. I would like us to agree whether this is something we would like to look at. And if it's something we'd like to look at, we can work out where we prioritize it tomorrow, and it may end up being a little bit further down the list than you'd
Yeah,
like, James.
sure.
But
Sure,
I'd like
no.
us
Sure,
to
sure.
agree today whether this is something we would like to actually discuss. James has set it out. Does anybody have anyone? And we'll leave it with code maintenance for now, although there's a lot of overlap today. Anybody have any thoughts about this from the code maintenance committee point of view? All right. Yes, was that an unmuted microphone there?
There are two hands up.
Oh, Jennifer, sorry, I missed the, so I missed the hands. I will take them, but I'm not sure if they're hands up from last time or not. So Jennifer Dunham first.
Again, forgetful. Sorry about that.
No, that's all right. My Zoom pops at me whenever somebody puts a hand up, and it hadn't popped, which is why I hadn't noticed the two hands were up. And I don't have permission. I'm not a co-host, so I can't lower the hand. But yeah, thank you. And Jody. Yeah.
My hand's for another question.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
This is FM, as long as...
Yeah, sure. I was going to broaden it out, so go for it.
My personal feeling is it would be lovely to not have the any pronunciation kinds of rules because of what we just talked about, which is that pronunciation is different in different countries. So that's my personal view as someone who teaches pre-service teachers Braille and having to explain some of the more obscure rules to them.
Yeah. Well, that would be my preference as a programmer as well. I mean, the clarification could in fact be that we don't take into account pronunciation, and that could be the answer.
Mm. Yeah. So it's really, a clarification of the rule because it's ambiguous. That's the reason for the potential charge. And in fact, there's only a very small number of words which are affected anyway, either way, in this rule. So another option is just to say these are the exception, the rules where you don't use had.
Mm.
That's the other alternative.
So I'll refer us back to the original question. Is it something that we feel we ought to work on? Because if it's something we feel we ought to work on, we can move it as a charge. Now, that was a hand up, but I didn't catch... who the hand was.
Well,
oh, I
Matthew,
think was,
you have moderators that can that are meant
oh,
to
that's,
like
that's
go
true.
Tell you, right?
Sorry,
so you
I'm not.
Kind of
yeah.
I mean, you're. Sorry, I'm not trying to tell you like stop it, Matthew. I'm definitely not trying to do that. But I just want to let you know that you actually you
yes,
don't
I'm
have
not,
to
I'm,
worry
I'm
about
not
them.
Used to being on this side of the table.
Yeah, because you usually are the moderator.
Because I'm usually the moderator. Sorry, and apologies to Amber, who's doing a fantastic job. I certainly didn't mean to step on toes.
Oh, it's all right. Well, and I've been keeping an eye on the attendees, but for the panelists it's Jody with a hand up.
Yeah, who's already spoken. All right.
Let's see if there's I don't see any others.
No
at
that's
this time.
Fine.
And you'll probably want to monitor the panelists just because we're the like Judy will let us know when we can have, or Matthew, when we can have attendee speak.
Okay,
so
great.
If it helps, I know it's hard because you have to go back and forth. So that probably be the
yes,
way
that
to
is
go.
Helpful. Okay, great.
It just reminds me that we were about to start on in more of this work to do, particularly with the lower group sign BE. Remember the beret?
Yes.
Beret or beret. Or...
Do we have a? Do we have anything that, actually? That do we have that charged? Or
yes,
is that just
CM22? Is it?
I'll have a look.
To expand the word list. There should be one about expanding the word list.
Yes.
That's a charge.
But it doesn't talk specifically about the...
But that's on the list.
...problem, yeah.
So if you remember FM, it was you, I think, and I did a lot of work. Ooh, must be at least
four
last
years
quadrennium.
Ago. This is
FM. And we have a proposed list of about 800 words to add. So we've already given that to the CMC. And the plan was to discuss it in batches of 50, 100, whatever. And we were going to start off with uncontentious words. And I did even propose the first batch of them.
Yes, that's right. Sorry, FM, did you want to speak to that?
Oops.
No,
No.
that's all right. That's fine.
The reason I'm hesitating is because I think the whole contested word list, I think, is actually a what we were just talking about is based on pronunciation. And that seems to be more of a global issue than
Than
contraction
just the
rules.
hand contraction. So do we want.
I
Sorry,
was just
Jody.
going to say I could be wrong, but I seem to remember that I even pronounced Bere differently from how Kathy Reeson, also from Australia, pronounced it. I think she might have said Bere, and I said Bere. Yeah,
So do
the
we actually.
pronunciation really,
Yeah.
yeah,
Do we want
causes
then a
issues.
broader charge? Not specifically about the had contraction, but the had contraction could be an example. Do we actually then want a broader charge to something like review rules, review section 10 to minimize the reliance on pronunciation for. Or to minimize the number of rules based on pronunciation. Would that be a fair, because that then would it would allow us to talk about had, but it would also allow us to talk about BE and other things that came up in the meantime. James, you were the one that proposed had specifically. Did you want the right of response on that?
Okay. Are there any other rules which do rely on pronunciation? I think the only one I can think of is about the preference, which would seriously distort the word.
Well, and the aforesaid BE, which
CMAH has also got pronunciation in it.
one, sorry?
CMAH relating to one. But that's different. That's
Ah,
pronouncing
yeah, that's a
two
different one. Yeah,
syllables. That's
that's a
different.
different one. Yeah.
Sorry.
That's all
Well,
right.
this is FM
So,
again.
well, I think BE con and dis,
5:27 p.m.
that's
5:27.
already covered. It says a syllable, so that's not pronunciation. It's a syllable.
Yeah, and this is FM again, just saying, pointing to the research that the executive committee was presented with by Robert Engelbretson, Simon Fischerbaum, and Kay Holbrook, related to morphemes, related not to
Yeah.
an emphasis on syllables, but instead on meaning-centered chunks of words that then are distorted when contractions are used, and their research indicating that that is what causes more errors than, syllables.
When
Jennifer.
contractions bridge morphemes, yeah.
Yeah. We are coming up on time. I heard Jennifer.
Yes, two things, if I may. One, the idea of looking at a broader charge on number 10, it gives me a bit of pause given the important charges we already have, and it feels like it would lead to us changing some things that are already fairly well established that we would then have to help people relearn. I do have a comment on a different task that you might like, but I'll wait till you're ready for that.
Okay. So we're not quite so unanimous on this one. So I wonder whether what we might do is, I think given the time, I don't think we're necessarily going to need an hour or something to prioritize the work, which is mainly what we need to do in this in the next session. So what I think I might do is hear what it. So we've heard the task that James has spoken about. What I might do is hear from you, Jennifer, and also I know that Jody, you had something, and then we can perhaps spend half an hour of the next session tidying this up, and then go into prioritization. Go for it, Jennifer, the task that you were thinking of.
The task CML, if I'm correct about this, I believe this was left over from something that Banna submitted, and it says clarify the use of rules for list construction in Appendix 1. And that actually, if I'm correct, I believe that has been done already with the previous updates that were done, what was it, 2 years ago?
Okay.
10.9.
along with the section 10
and I
updates
thought we
to
had,
section 10 yeah. and standing alone. I think it was
yeah,
with
because the
I think you're right.
The reason for bringing it was that a lot of people thought that a transcriber should use the rules for list construction to make decisions, whereas that was not the purpose, and that, I believe, has now been clarified in the third edition of the rulebook.
That's fine. I'm happy to mark it complete. Thank you.
That's three gone. And, well done.
Yep. And Jody,
I think
you
I have another
must...
one.
Yep.
You'll be happy about. There's a charge CMR at a second version of the short form list, which is alphabetical rather than in order by short form. But I thought that we reordered the appendix one to, you know, put it in alphabetical order with that same, you know, series of updates when we did the medial capital
yep.
indicator.
Okay. I'm
Is
happy
that
to.
Correct?
That's an easy Did, one.
I'm yeah, looking at the appendix one and it's
5:30 p.m.
It looks
pretty alphabetical. Okay, that's fine. I'm more than
that was one to go, and then just I just noticed CMAM.
Sorry, is that to be deleted? That one is it? Was it?
I think so. Yeah.
CMR.
Yeah, got you. Thank you.
And CMAM, what happens if a typeform symbol indicator is in front of a word sign? Just flagging, would that one go along with the typeform work?
Yes, it would. And it may, in fact, already be.
That
was
oh,
a, that
really
was a, it was a speculative one. And it, because somebody asked the question and I didn't go back and check the rules. So, yes, it would. That would go as part of the typeforms work.
Oh, there's another one. Sorry, CMAL. Allow typeform word indicators for words such as A and I, which currently require a symbol indicator. Gee, there's lots.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
All right. We're at time.
All right.
Let's us to draw this to a close here, and I shall. We can, say, spend the next part of the next session just finishing this off, but I'll. Pass it back to Judy.
Well, it's
for now. Thank
it's
you.
Tomorrow, actually, the your next session.
Oh, sorry. Yes, I meant my next session, not
right,
the next
right,
session. Sorry.
Right. Okay, good. All right. So we'll take a break now and let's take a 14-minute break and we'll be back at 21:45.